KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have mostly sunny skies, 78 degrees. We look for a partly cloudy, hot, and humid today, a high of 95. Winds out of the south at 15 to 30 miles per hour. A heat advisory will be in effect for the entire listening area beginning at 1 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments in Atlantic. In state news, authorities say minor flooding in Ames is expected to continue today, but end as Squaw Creek and the South Skunk River fall back below flood stage. The National Weather Service said earlier this morning that the creek was expected to crest more than 2 feet above flood stage and return below flood stage later this afternoon. The service says the river is expected to crest less than a foot above flood stage and also return to below flood stage later in the day. A flash flood warning had been issued Thursday for much of Story County and eastern Boone County after more than 4 inches had fallen, with more on the way. Flood warnings were also issued for Calhoun, Humboldt, Pocahontas, and Webster counties. Street flooding had been reported in Fort Dodge yesterday. Another big change in the weather is coming, one that'll feel like it's midsummer, though we still have a week of spring left. Meteorologist Kurt Kotenberg with the National Weather Service in Des Moines says, yes, it was already really hot a few weeks ago, but the next several days promise to be the hottest days of the year so far.
There's very high confidence that temperatures will be in the middle 90s Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Heat index values will be pushing anywhere between 100 and 105 degrees around the metro, and across most of the state, we're going to be pushing the triple digits.
He reminds us it's not even summer yet. That season officially arrives next Thursday, but Mother Nature doesn't always follow the calendar.
So basically, starting tomorrow, Friday, lasting into Saturday, lasting into Sunday, and probably lasting into Monday as well, we're going to have some of the hottest temperatures of the year here in Iowa. So, you know, the past couple of weeks, you know, it's been well above average. This is going to be probably the hottest air that we've had.
Kotenberg, who was interviewed yesterday, obviously said it's been a strange few months for weather after a prolonged winter with late snows, a shortened spring, and an early summer. And if you think this seems to be way too hot of a forecast for this year in the early in the year, you're right.
In Des Moines, the normal high is 81 degrees. Up in Waterloo, the normal high temperature is right around 78. And our forecast is going to be again in the middle 90s, maybe even some upper 90s. Will be a solid 15 degrees above normal for temperatures.
And statewide heat advisories have been issued for most of Iowa. In Sac, Crawford, Carroll, Audubon, Guthrie, Dallas, Cass, Adair, Adams, Ringgold, Taylor, and Union counties, and Madison, that heat advisory is in effect from 1 p.m. today until 7 p.m. Sunday for heat indices of 100 to 105 degrees each afternoon. For Monona, Harrison, Shelby, and Pottawatomie County, the heat advisory is in effect from 1 p.m. today until 7 p.m. Saturday for heat indices of 102 to 105 degrees each day during the afternoon. A few tips to handle the heat: wear lightweight and light-colored clothes, drink plenty of water, and if you'll be working outside, take frequent breaks. Never leave your children or pets inside vehicles. Make sure pets and livestock have access to water. Also, check on your friends and neighbors, especially the elderly, to make sure they're doing okay this weekend. And high temperatures and clear skies today and tomorrow are likely to lead to elevated ozone levels. The Department of Natural Resources recommend that Iowans with respiratory or heart disease, the elderly, and children limit prolonged outdoor exertion during the afternoon and evening today and tomorrow. Hot and sunny conditions, as we mentioned, are expected across the region, which favor the formation of photochemical smog. In those conditions, volatile organic compounds react with nitrogen oxide, resulting in an increase in ozone. Volatile organic compounds are emitted from the evaporation of consumer and industrial solvents, such as the evaporation from gas tanks and vehicles or mowers. Nitrogen oxides are created by combustion and are contained in the exhaust of vehicles and coal-fired boilers. You can keep track of the evolving air quality conditions by checking the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's air quality map at www.airnow.gov. Elsewhere in the news, police in Clarinda Thursday evening arrested a man from Newmarket. 52-year-old Richard Lance Adkisson was taken into custody for possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, possession of marijuana, and driving a motor vehicle while under the revocation, and failure to wear a seatbelt. Adkisson was arrested following a traffic stop in the 300 block of East Garfield Street. He was being held in the Page County Jail on $6,000 bond. The Atlantic City Council members were led on a tour of the new Elite Octane ethanol plant Wednesday night by Elite Octane President and CEO Nick Bowdish. The dry mill ethanol plant intends to begin operating at full capacity sometime next week. The plant is, of course, very visible from the north side of Atlantic due to its two 156-foot diameter, 150-foot tall Sukup corn storage bins. Sukup says that the bins are large enough to encapsule a Boeing 757. Each bin has the capacity for 2 million bushels of total corn storage capacity worth 4 million bushels. And Bowdish talked about the supporting structure for those bins.
So underneath these bins, what you can't even see is we've got $1.4 million stuck in the ground. There's 1,384 concrete piles. They're about 16 inches in diameter and 40 foot deep. And that's both bins combined. So that's all structural support to hold the weight of what these bins store.
One of the first stops on the tour Wednesday was the corn receiving area near those large bins. And one of the highlights of the operation, he said, is the speed and efficiency of the grain dumping process.
When you time it and you stand here, the farmer pulls in, opens both doors. It's right at 1 minute for the grain to fall out of his trailer. By the time he rolls his doors shut, gets back in his truck, pulls out, and the next truck's over the pit, that takes about 1 minute. At that point, the pit's empty, and the next truck is wide open again. So we're dumping a truck each door, you know, in a 2 minute cycle. So when you add them together, we're basically dumping a corn truck every 60 seconds here, if it's coming down the lane fast enough. And what we've seen is, when everything's working, and we've had good stretches where no glitches, the corn's not coming in fast enough to get a line. That's what we wanted. We wanted the farmer to come in and be out of here in less than 10 minutes.
Bowdish said the corn that is received goes through a grinding process to create a flour for the first part of the ethanol-making process. And after the starches are converted to sugar, he said the process becomes similar to brewing beer. Further processing separates the alcohol from the dry distiller's grains and water, and the dry distiller's grain is sold as livestock feed around the world. The plant also yields some corn oil that is mostly sold to biodiesel plants to use in their process. The ethanol eventually has to be blended with 2% gasoline to comply with federal regulations and prevent the alcohol from being used in other ways. Bowdish thanked the city council for their work in helping to get the Gray Water Project completed to the plant. He said the water will supply all of the cooling needs for the plant and will cut down the use of fresh water that a normal ethanol plant would use by two-thirds. He said due to new FDA regulations, they'll have to use wells for the water that contacts the grain, though. During the process, the only product emitted out of the stack from the plant will be water vapor. And Bowdish addressed concerns about the odor coming from the plant, saying he doesn't expect there to be much that is noticeable, but he'll let the public decide for themselves.
The only odor we really get when we make the wet cake and we put the feed out on the pad, you know, gluten feed, it has a sweet smell like silage, like corn silage. And so about the only odor in a dry mill ethanol plant that we get is, of course, when you're right on top of that feed, you can smell a sweet odor, okay? Granted, I work in the plants every day, so when I'm a quarter mile out our driveway, out at the road, you know, that's not a scent I recognize. I think one of the things that, of course, the whole community is interested to learn is, once the plant's up and running, and the first day we have a north wind, you know, can you even sense any difference? My thought is, I think it's going to be very, very hard for anybody to notice any difference, but, you know, we're all going to know here in 2 weeks. As I've told everybody all along, we'll get up and running, and, you know, I'm not going to overpromise anything. It's for everybody in the community to judge, you know, their own thought. I'm not going to tell people what they need to do.
The plant has the holding capacity for 6 million gallons of ethanol, which Bowdish said is about 15 days of production for the plant. The news was brought to you by ASI, Audiology and Hearing Instruments. They're located at 601 Poplar in Atlantic, or call 243-5796. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.